we follow the money against and for tighter rules for firearms in America. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, is focusing on mental health services and increasing security at schools following the murder of 19 children and two adults in South Texas this week. President Biden is focusing on pushing Congress to stand up to lobbyists from the firearms industry and firearms enthusiasts. Over the last two decades, groups such as the National Rifle Association and Gun Owners of America have far outspent gun control advocates, but groups that support new rules for firearms have other tools. Marketplace's Justin Ho has that.
Gun control organizations have been spending more in recent years. Sheila Krumholtz is executive director of Open Secrets, which monitors money in politics.
In terms of lobbying, gun control groups spent $2.3 million in 2019. That's the most they'd ever spent in a single year. And they've spent more than $2 million in each of the last 2 years since then.
Krumholtz says there have also been some new entrants on the gun control side, with more resources, including a group founded by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg called Every Town for Gun Safety,
which has spent millions of dollars in recent years. They really make up the bulk of the increased spending by gun control groups recently.
That said, gun control groups are still at a big disadvantage. Over the last few years, gun rights groups have spent over five times as much on lobbying as gun control groups. Law professor Adam Winkler at UCLA says many gun control organizations have been trying to focus their spending on states where gun reform legislation is more likely to pass.
We've seen a number of states restrict military-style assault rifles, high-capacity magazines, and adopt red flag laws, making it easier to take guns away from someone who is in the midst of a crisis.
In recent years, gun control advocates have also been pressuring corporations to cut ties with gun rights groups. Alan Rostron is a professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and a former attorney with the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He says that can be effective.
It raises awareness of the issue and makes some corporations sort of think about what they're supporting and what they're doing.
Still, that's not the same as passing gun reform laws at the federal level. Rostron says gun control advocates might have more success lobbying Congress to fund more research on gun violence.
There's always been pretty good data on the number of deaths from firearms, but not very good data on non-lethal injuries. How many are there, for example?
And while Congress has been funding some research in recent years, Rostron says it could certainly do more. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Texas has now been the site of 8 mass shootings in 13 years, and its legislature in recent sessions has loosened firearms rules. The economic contraction we saw in the first quarter was revised down further today. The economy was contracting at an annual rate of 1.5%. In person in the studio here, first time since pandemic, is Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Grant Thornton. One more accounting quarter of this and it'll be a recession. But no, Diane?
No, not yet. Might be down the road, but really important in this GDP figure. It was 1.4% down, now 1.5% down. Initially, it came out down. The reason it came out down is because the rest of the world was hit harder by the war and lockdowns in China than we were in the United States. The resilience of the domestic side of the economy just kept going right through this. And what we know now is that consumers also, particularly in the lowest quintile, the bottom 20% of households, they actually drain their savings quite a bit. And they're, all the savings we amassed during the pandemic, they got some little bit extra and were in the best place they had been in really, really long time.
But they're not getting the extra anymore. That's dried up.
And, inflation burns. And this is where it burns the most, is those lower income households. So, no, we won't get, two negative quarters. First of all, we're going to get a bounce back in the second quarter in terms of real GDP growth, and that won't be a recession. But, boy, am I worried about the latter part of this year.
Yeah, because our friends at the Federal Reserve are doing their darndest to slow the economy, and they might, in fact, do that.
They might do more than slow the economy and actually raise the unemployment rate. And this is one thing that I've been worried about, but it is something that I think, unfortunately, is where we're at, the trade-off of trying to bring inflation down. It's a painful one, but it's better than decades-long inflation or allowing this inflation to become more entrenched.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, great to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Pfizer is now pledging to sell products, including its COVID vaccine and its COVID treatment, to low-income countries at a lower price. The company says the deal will cover 1 billion people in 45 countries, starting with parts of Africa. The news came at Davos, the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum that wraps up today. The BBC's Naomi Grimley has more.
Like the HIV/AIDS crisis before it, the COVID pandemic has highlighted huge health inequalities, including access to drugs. Pfizer was criticised for rolling its COVID vaccine out to wealthy countries first, so this latest plan is designed to redress the imbalance. 23 patented Pfizer drugs will now be available at cost in 45 low- and middle-income countries, such as Rwanda, Malawi and Ghana. It will include not only its COVID vaccine and its antiviral Paxlovid, but also key drugs for cancer and rheumatoid arthritis. Pfizer's chief executive, Albert Bourla, said this new agreement had been informed by the difficulties of the global vaccine rollout.
Unfortunately, there exists a tremendous health equity gap in our world that determines which of us can use these innovations and which of us cannot. With all we have learned and accomplished over the past 2 years, the time is now to begin closing this gap even more.
The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, said Pfizer had set a new standard which other pharmaceutical companies might emulate. But some campaigners aren't so impressed. The People's Vaccine Alliance said it was too little too late for the millions who died while Pfizer made record profits.
Naomi Grimley is with our partner, the BBC. In China, Beijing has ordered workers and students to keep staying home in 5 districts amid new limits in other areas. COVID infections are down sharply across China. The financial capital, Shanghai, is now in the 8th week of a strict lockdown. But for some residents, like Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak, there was a very brief respite. Jennifer?
On Monday, a surprise. We can leave the compound, but only twice and between 2 and 4 p.m. Other areas got 8 till noon. Countless others can't step out at all. So on Monday, my boyfriend and I cycled. The streets were slightly busier. At a tourist hotspot, Wukong Mansion, people walked their dogs and hugged friends. It almost felt like old times, except nothing was open nearby. A man tells me he was laid off 2 weeks ago, but today, he says, he's happy to be out. He raised his glass of red wine he brought from home. A couple of grocery stores are open, but we didn't have permits to enter. Luckily, a friend who has no restrictions on her movement offered to get us cereal. We ordered 12 boxes. We've stopped fighting for delivery spots long ago because it's impossible to work from home, hunt for food, and cook. Cereal counts as a meal. We just need to find more milk first. In Shanghai, on day 56 of the lockdown, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Oh, Jennifer. We also talked to activist Ralph Nader today on the legacy of an economic sustainability pioneer, Hazel Henderson, who's died at 89. Marketplace Morning Report podcast, if you missed the discussion on the air today. I'm David Brancaccio, and we are from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.